Welcome back to Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Some of you may have noticed we our programming had to make a few detours here the first half of the show, but we are live with you here. I'm Mark Bayshore. Glad you could join us later on here in this half hour. The newest segment, or the newest member of the WKAR radio team, Al Martin, joins us to talk sports. And today is the first day of his new show, Current Sports. Launches this afternoon on AM 870 WKAR, and Al's got lots to talk about here today. We've got lots to talk about here on this segment of Current State. Last week, officials from East Lansing, Meridian, Delhi, and Delta Townships launched the One Capital Region Coalition. The group seeks to expand local protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people living in the greater Lansing area. Here with us to discuss the effort are Nathan Triplett, East Lansing's Mayor Pro Tem. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Mark.
Trustee Angela Wilson of Meridian Township. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Mark.
And Emily Devendorf is Managing Director of Equality Michigan. Welcome to Current State, Emily.
Thank you. Good morning.
Nice to see you. Angela Wilson or Nathan Triplett, let's start with you. How did this regional effort get started?
Well, Mark, you know, in East Lansing, we've had this type of protection for over 40 years. The city of Lansing has had similar protection since 2006. It's been highly successful. And as a result of that, we wanted to see that protection expand across the region. So really, as one capital region, we could say that we didn't tolerate discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. So we've come together at this effort to expand those protections to these surrounding townships and hopefully further afield eventually.
And it really started in the 70s, though. East Lansing was really cutting edge when it came to these kinds of ordinances. 72, correct?
That's correct, actually. East Lansing was the first community in the United States to adopt a policy banning discrimination based on sexual orientation way back in March of 1972.
Now, do you know any of the history of that?
I do, actually. Truth be told, it's a big part of us being the home of Michigan State University. There was a student organization that broadened into a community organization in the 70s that brought this issue before the city council and eventually had them adopt this policy. It was obviously controversial at the time. It was not a unanimous vote the way that we'd certainly get on our council today. But we've grown a lot since then and have been a model for communities across not only the state of Michigan, but the country who have now adopted these ordinances.
Emily Devendorf, how do these local efforts fit into the larger statewide effort to make Michigan's laws more inclusive to LGBT residents?
Yes, the local human rights ordinances do a couple of things, the non-discrimination policies. They protect as many people as soon as possible, which is important because we have widespread discrimination against the LGBT community in Michigan. And as the Civil Rights Commission concluded in their adoption of a recent report in January, both the widespread discrimination against the LGBT community is impacting economic advancements and developments, and also, of course, harming our families. So we want to protect as many people as soon as possible in absence of protections at the state level, but also the fact that we have 23 municipalities, local governments, that have passed non-discrimination policies makes a very strong statement that the state is not stepping up to the plate, and the local governments and our corporations are shouldering the burden of attracting the best and brightest and holding on to our college students and taking care of our families so that we have both social and economic stability in Michigan.
Angela Wilson, give us the view from Meridian Township on this.
Well, it's really simple. You know, we value our community, all the members of our community, and one of the key values of, you know, just being American, being a Michigander, is that all people should be protected equally under the laws. And right now, I mean, it's not happening in Michigan, and it's really not happening at the federal level either, but we can do something. As Emily said, we can do something at the local level to ensure that all people have the opportunity to work, to have housing, to have a home, to make a living for themselves and their family without fear of being fired, of losing their housing or their home. And
is it primarily job loss that is the issue here, potential job loss, being fired because you're gay? Or,
you know, for us in Meridian, it's the big picture. It's everybody should be equally protected under the law. It doesn't matter whether it's based on your religion, based on your ethnicity, based on your sexual orientation. Everybody should be treated equally and fairly.
Emily, you mentioned 23 other local governments. I'm sorry, were you talking about the state of Michigan when you said that?
In the state of Michigan, okay. We have 23 local governments now that have passed these non-discrimination policies. And really, we have a great number of local governments that are in the process right now or are investigating passing these non-discrimination policies. Our local governments have really decided that right now is the time, and to wait any longer would be too late.
Nathan Triplett, do you have an idea of how enforcement of such a ban would work?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we have 40 years worth of history of how that's worked in East Lansing. Our ordinance covers employment, housing, and public accommodations. We have a human relations commission made up of city residents who are appointed by the council. I actually served on that commission prior to my election to East Lansing's council. That takes complaints. They have a hearing procedure. Ultimately, they can even go to the local district court for a subpoena to get people to come in and testify related to a hearing. And then our ordinance establishes a menu of options that they can choose from in crafting an appropriate remedy, whether it's reinstatement, back pay, requiring some type of other remedy to right that wrong. They've got a number of things available to them that's worked very successfully for us over the life of our policy.
Angela Wilson, what about measures from unit of government to unit of government? Is the idea to adopt the same measure in all the units of government?
Yes, Mark. If I can, currently, Meridian Township does have an anti-discrimination ordinance in fair housing that protects, you know, religion, race, color, national origin, age, sex, familial status, marital status, in buying, renting, loaning funds for homes. And we have a process of enforcing that very similar to East Lansing's starting with our Community Resources Commission. And I think that it is important that we adopt a more comprehensive that looks like the ordinances in Lansing and East Lansing, because we are a region. We are always talking about doing things at a regional level, and we don't want pockets of discrimination or lack of enforcement, or it's not the same. I think it's very important that we come close and look very similar across the different municipalities in the capital region.
Emily Devendorf, what community closest to Lansing has adopted one of these 23 communities you've mentioned?
Well, really, of course, we have Lansing has one, and East Lansing, and Mount Pleasant recently, within the last year, adopted one, and just very recently we had Royal Oak. Really, all over the state, as far up north as Traverse City within the last couple of years, we've been passing these policies. And coming from a statewide organization that does both victim services and the LGBT lobbying for the state, it's a very necessary measure, as Equality Michigan just in March had 41 cases of discrimination that we handled. And that was that could be employment discrimination, housing, but also potential hate crimes. The fact that we are covering employment, public accommodations, and housing in the same non-discrimination policies is essential to the safety and stability of our families.
Is there a certain amount of frustration here, though? I mean, knowing that there have been 41 cases like this that could be addressed more vigorously with a statute like this, and you have to wait for the statute?
There is absolutely frustration, because when I say we have 41 cases, I say that we have 41 cases, and out of those cases, there will be quite a few that fit into those categories of discrimination that we have no legal recourse to address in Michigan. So that leaves us to only scramble to find the resources for these individuals in order to help to fix some of the damage that's been done, but not to find justice.
Nathan Triplett, can you tell us anything at all about sentiment in Delta and Delhi townships on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these three townships have been part of this effort because there's energetic leadership on all of their township boards that are interested in seeing this done. And I think, you know, what's remarkable is one of our greatest challenges in passing these ordinances across the state, and I've been involved in quite a few of those campaigns, is overcoming the perception on the part of residents of Michigan that this is already illegal. They assume that in 2013, it's already illegal to fire someone for being gay, and that's simply not the case. So oftentimes, one of our first hurdles to overcome is to show people there is a problem, there's no good solution yet, and that's why it's important for your local government to act. I think that the residents of Delhi Township, Delta Township, Meridian, East Lansing, and all over the state of Michigan, if you look at where these ordinances have been adopted, recognize that this kind of discrimination is not only wrong, but it's bad for our state, and they are very supportive of those officials who are willing to stand up and lead and say that this kind of discrimination has no place in our communities.
You tout the economic development advantages of this pretty regularly. I have to ask, does it frustrate you that you have to employ that tactic in order to make people aware of this thing, in order that shouldn't the human rights angle alone be enough?
I think for me, certainly that it is enough. And normally when I talk about this, I say it in sort of a two-phased approach. We should do it because it's the right thing to do. But if that's not enough of a reason for you, here are these very tangible economic benefits to our community. And frankly, I think one of the reasons to focus on that component now on a regional level is that it's very different doing it community to community or doing it across the region. We want to send a message that Mid-Michigan as a whole, as an entity, is welcoming and open for business. And you don't have to worry if you've driven from Lansing into Lansing Township and into East Lansing and into Meridian that you've got completely different rules in all four of those communities. We want to send this as a collective message about
right.
What we stand for.
Angela and Emily, do you think the economic justification for this, does that grab people's attention?
I think it does. I think it is addressing a lot of the policy platforms that the conservatives are using right now. Since Snyder got into office, we've been hearing about how he wants to run Michigan like a business, and more than half of our Fortune 500 companies actually have non-discrimination policies. They know that in order to have the workers that can take care of their families and want to stay with their companies and help their companies grow, that they're going to need to provide protections for them. So I think that the economic development argument certainly fits into that dialogue. And I think that while, yes, we should be doing these policies because it's the right thing to do for our friends and our neighbors. Also, you need to meet people where they are. You need to acknowledge that other people have different priorities and goals than you do. In this case, I think we all share the same goals and we want to get there for different reasons, and that's fine.
How does resistance to this manifest itself, though? Can you speak to that, Angie Wilson?
Well, I think one of the biggest things, and it comes to what Nathan had said, people just question, well, does it even happen? That's one of the biggest things. People assume that it is, that our LGBT community are protected under the same laws as anti-discrimination laws as our other communities. And when they realize that they're not, and they're like, well, where's the information? And
so it's not so much attitudinal, it's more constitutional awareness, legal awareness, than it is really attitudinal awareness?
I think that that's a big part of it. Actually, just if you look, when Lansing adopted their ordinance in 2006, people did come forward who were adamantly opposed to the idea that adopting this ordinance was the right thing to do. They thought that there was something, they had a religious objection or an ethical objection, they were against the ordinance. Just in the intervening time since 2006, since we've announced this effort last week, we've had very few folks use that. They're looking at the piece of it, well, is this really necessary? Do you have other priorities? That's the objection. It's not that this is wrong. It's should this be what we're focusing on now?
Talk to us about the timeline a little bit. What would you like to see happen and when? Angela?
Well, I know in Meridian Township, and I also believe with my colleagues in Delta and Delhi, that we want to get this conversation started this summer. And for us, the process, we have to have it as a discussion item on our agenda, have an ordinance written, looked at by our attorneys, and then brought back before the board for adoption or a vote on. And I looking for something to be done by this fall in Meridian Township, and I hope that it's a similar timeline for the rest of the communities that are looking at this in the region.
Emily Devendorf, are you confident? Are you confident about this? Do you think this is going to happen?
Yes, I feel very good about the...
Sooner as opposed to later?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I feel that way about Elliot Larson as well. I think that we're getting to the point where, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, you think that we are ready for this, that it is past the time that we should be stepping forward and sticking up for our LGBT neighbors.
Nathan Triplett is East Lansing's Mayor Pro Tem. Angela Wilson is a Meridian Township Trustee, and Emily Devendorf is the Managing Director of Equality Michigan. Thank you all for joining me to discuss the One Capital Region Coalition.
Thank you.
Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Bayshore. Reach us at currentstate@wkar.org via email. currentstate@wkar.org. We launch a new program with a new host today here on WKAR. Current Sports with Al Martin debuts this afternoon on AM 870 WKAR, and Al's got so much to stir up today that there wasn't room for it all between 1 and 2 o'clock, so he joins us now on Current State. Congratulations again on this opportunity. We're looking forward to the show, and welcome to Current State.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Truly a pleasure to be here, man. I'm excited, man. The blood is boiling, brother. I'm ready to get on it, man.
Well, just 4 months ago, I went through the same thing that you are going through today when we launched this program.
Right.
So we haven't been at this too terribly long, so
right.
I'm sure you're excited. Now, you're coming from Channel 6, WLNS-TV.
Yes.
Were you reporting and producing there then?
Yes, I was. I was the fill-in sports anchor, and I was a full-time reporter. So reporting there a lot, man, learned a lot from Fred Heumann there, who was one of my mentors. He's the sports director at Channel 6. And, man, that's where I got my feet wet, man, and it was something else. I loved it. I loved it there, man.
Well, there's no shortage of stories today. I'm under the impression last night was one of the few times the Detroit Red Wings have won a seventh playoff game, a seventh game in
yes.
a playoff series. But they did win it. And Anaheim calls it a season. Did you stick it out and make it all the way?
I did, man. So I'm a little tired. I need some coffee right now. I stayed up late to watch the whole thing, man. But I'm here with you now. But it was an unbelievable game, and it was really, really nice to see the Red Wings. Like I said, it's been quite a long time since the Red Wings have won a game seven in the playoffs. So,
yeah.
And to really see, you know, Henrik Zetterberg. I mean, a guy who, you know, is now a newly captain to this team, and to really step up the way he did. I mean, he had a goal, and he had an assist for a goal. Really, without him, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about the Red Wings moving on right now, Mark.
And Justin Abdelkader, good
right.
for a goal as well?
Without a doubt. And it's good to see him back, you know, after that the whole, you know, hit and suspension, and to see him get back. And he also scored a goal in Game 6 and now in Game 7. It's good to see him back on the ice.
Okay, so a lot of excitement in Hockey Town. Detroit will go from facing the seventh seed, Anaheim, now to, I believe, the Blackhawks
yes.
are the top seed, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, the top seed. Now, Mark, I got to be honest with you now. I'm a guy who keeps it 100. Now, I'm from Detroit, born and bred. I love the Red Wings, don't get me wrong. But I don't see them beating the Blackhawks, man.
Okay.
I have the Red Wings losing to the Blackhawks in 5. The Blackhawks are just so loaded and so talented.
Okay. Tiger Woods was all over TV yesterday. It was
yes.
the dutiful son He wins one for his mom on Mother's Day. How perfect is that? And this was a biggie. This was the Players' Championship. Yes. What did you make of it?
Man, it's really good to see Tiger, because I'm a huge Tiger Woods fan.
Me too.
To see him back, I mean, to me, he's my favorite athlete. And to see him, you know, going through the whole turmoil and to get back to be the number one golfer in the world and to be playing the way he is, I mean, it's simply remarkable. And an interesting dynamic to that to yesterday was to see him and Sergio. I don't know if you saw that kind of feud that went on between those two throughout throughout that match. And it was really interesting to see Tiger just zone in, hone in, lock in, and just go out and just play great golf. I mean, it was fun to watch.
We might want to explain the tension between Sergio Garcia and Tiger Woods. Apparently, Tiger and Sergio were playing together on Saturday.
Yeah.
And they were on opposite sides of the fairway. Mm-hmm. And Woods had it in the rough, if I'm not mistaken.
He
had it in the woods.
In the woods, yeah.
And he pulled out a fairway wood, and people thought he was going to hit a fairway wood from the woods. And the crowd erupted.
Yeah.
And it really distracted Garcia at just the wrong moment.
Exactly. You hit it right on the head, Mark. I mean, that was the moment where, you know, it kind of stirred up the pot between Tiger and Sergio, because he feels as though once he pulled out that fairway wood, like you said, it got the crowd riled up and kind of threw – this is what Sergio says – it kind of threw him off his game.
Right.
So once Tiger didn't, you know, didn't acknowledge it at all, but he was asked if he knew that it bothered Sergio afterwards, and Tiger says, hey – well, you know, what do you expect coming from Sergio? I expect to hear that from him. So, I mean, to see that dynamic between those two, it's fun because it makes golf a little bit more interesting than your average golf fan watching it, you know?
And Garcia just crashed and burned the last two holes.
Yeah,
on the
17th. He hit it in the water twice on the 17th, then I believe hit it in the 18th, in the water on the 18th as well. So he really collapsed. Tiger took advantage of it. And, you know, when Tiger's leading on that last day, I mean, his track record speaks for itself. I mean, he's only lost four times if he's coming into that final round leading. So, I mean, he did what Tiger Woods does, and it's good to see him back.
His 78th career PGA victory, just four short of Sam Snead's record.
Right.
And Sergio Garcia wins the Jose Valverde Award yesterday.
Very good.
Leave that as it is.
That was good, Mark. That was very good, man.
I know you're an intense basketball guy. The Warriors even their series with San Antonio yesterday with a 10-point win. So the Greybeards on the Spurs couldn't get it done yesterday.
No, they couldn't get it done. But, you know, something is so special about that game, and I think was the storyline of that game, was to see Steph Curry, the way he played coming off of that ankle injury. I mean, a lot of people didn't think he would play that game. I mean, mm-hmm. there were a lot of question marks, but he told Mark Jackson, hey, put me in there, coach. I want to see what I can do. And he came out there, and you could tell throughout the game he was laboring on it. I mean, he didn't have the same push off of it as he usually has. But, he got through the pain. He had a few nice jumpers. I mean, he didn't have the lift as he usually has because of that ankle injury, of course. But he gutted it out and was really one of the biggest reasons for them winning that game. And a lot of when I look at that game, I look at it from an area of toughness. Steph Curry's toughness has really been questioned throughout his career, if anything. And for him to come out there and show that, hey, I can ball even when I'm injured, mm-hmm. really kind of shut up the critics now to say, hey, this kid's the real deal. So I think that was really interesting to see. Pushed him to overtime, and he had a great game.
How much action did Draymond get yesterday?
Draymond got a little
I don't
action.
Know.
Yeah, he did. He's been playing consistently throughout this series, actually. He's come in, you know, getting rebounds, playing some good defense here and there. He had a bad air ball 4-3. I don't know if you saw that near the end. The game was already in hand, but the shot clock was running down. Draymond decided to take a 3 air ball to think. But hey, you know, the game was already won. Don't harp on that too much, you know.
Well, it may be too early in the season to get too worked up about the Tigers, but seriously, Jose Valverde couldn't get it done in the ninth inning yesterday either. And this is there's a lot of drama here surrounding Jose.
It's a lot of drama because, I mean, they brought him in from the minors, and it's been a question mark, you know, is as to if, you know, Jose still can produce what he did at the beginning of his career with the Tigers.
Right.
And to see him give up that game last night, I mean, his first blown save, I mean, that was really, really tough. And just reading the newspapers and listening to the radio on my way in today, a lot of people just bashing him, you know what I mean? Even though this is only his first blown save, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, we've seen this before. So he's really got a target on his back, Mark.
Yeah. I just hope the Valverde thing is not drama that lasts the whole season. I'll tell you that.
Exactly. Definitely.
That'll get old.
That'll very really quickly.
We've got $20 million worth of renovations that are being proposed for Spartan Stadium. The Free Press's Joe Rexroad, who is a current state contributor, writes in this morning's paper that the Board of Trustees is expected to approve this. What's being proposed?
Well, actually, from reading this morning, it will start in May of 2014, and they're going to re-innovate the entire Spartan Stadium, a new press box, new recruiting booth for new recruits, everything. So it should be fun.
North End.
Yeah, on the North End.
North End, that's right.
Exactly.
Al Martin, Current Sports, debuts this afternoon on AM 870 WKAR. Thanks, Al. Good luck.
No problem. Thanks, Mark.
Coming up tomorrow on Current State, former state legislator Matt Gillard discusses early childhood education from his position in the Sandbox Party. Also, we speak to the director of the film Project Ice, which tells the story of the Great Lakes through ice. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Joe Lindstroth is our producer. Thanks to producer Emmanuel Berry, Aaron Young for engineering, and Yensia Wong for production assistance. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR.
Support for WKAR is provided by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. alumni.msu.edu. And by the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce, supporting more than 1,100 businesses in the greater Lansing area for more than 110 years. Information at lansingchamber.org.